much for being here today to enjoy an afternoon of Johann Sebastian Bach arias featuring soprano, oboe, and the oboe family. As I was searching for a topic for my research project, I knew I was interested in exploring music that uses the oboe for word painting and image painting. As an orchestral player, I have been intrigued by such music as Beethoven's Pastoral Symphony No. 6, in which the oboe personifies shepherds in the field and imitates birdsong. I was taken also by Berlioz's Symphony Fantastique, particularly where the oboe and English horn call out to each other in somber tones. When I began to look for examples of such expressive use of the oboe in solo works, Bach quickly came to mind. Although Bach left rather little music originally composed for the oboe, the instrument and its close relatives are featured prominently in his vocal works, especially the cantatas. There are more than 200 movements from the sacred and secular cantatas, as well as the oratorios and passions that feature the oboe, oboe d'amore, or the oboe da caccia, which is a relative and predecessor to the English horn. Of these, 173 arias include full-fledged oboe obbligatos, 56 with soprano, 49 alto, 40 for tenor, and 28 bass. The majority of these arias come from Bach's sacred cantatas, and the largest sub-collection is for soprano and oboe. With these numbers in mind, I selected 10 arias for soprano, oboe obbligato, and continuo from the sacred cantatas to study and perform. While my family and friends know I'm a cheerful and relatively bubbly person as long as I'm not hangry, in selecting these arias, I was drawn to the darker minor mode arias. This became an interesting choice as I discovered that Bach overall composed twice as many arias that convey emotions such as happiness, joy, and hope, rather than anger, sadness, or fear. However, in the subcollection of arias for soprano and oboe, obbligato, minor keys are more strongly represented. We can speculate that the tone color of the oboe and its relatives might be better suited to lament and despair, rather than to rejoicing. Regarding the arias that will be heard today, the primary instrumentation will be soprano, oboe obbligato, and continuo, which includes the harpsichord and cello. The oboe in Bach's cantata ensembles was used orchestrally in the choruses, but the instrument often stepped forward as a soloist in the arias, taking the role of obbligato. This term means the instrument becomes less like accompaniment and more an elaborate melodic line in duet with the voice. Bach regarded the oboe as an equivalent to the human voice and therefore up to the task of playing these more demanding roles. The oboe and violin were the two instruments he used most often as obbligato. By the addition of an obbligato part to the voice in continuo, Bach enhanced the meaning of the text and created variety in the instrumental groupings. Bach's extensive use of the oboe in the arias can be attributed in part to his position as Kapellmeister. In the words of Bach's contemporary, Johann Mattheson, the Kapellmeister is a learned court official and a composer of the highest order. He is responsible for directing, arranging, and composing sacred as well as secular music at the court of an emperor, king, or duke, and for the supervision of performances. Because of this demanding position, which Bach held in Köthen and Leipzig, he was composing regularly for all the church services, and therefore needing reliable musicians. While he did not always have the best of luck with the supply of local musicians and their skills, we know of a particular oboist in Leipzig, for whom Bach composed the majority of our oboe arias, and I'll speak more about him later on. The oboe as an obbligato instrument comes with a large and rather taxing role. The oboe is featured in the ritornellos that begin and end the arias, and it has solo passages between vocal phrases and textual repetitions. In examining these pieces, I've grown to appreciate how much the oboe obbligato's lines can be completely separate from the soprano, creating a melody and countermelody contrast, similar to the independent but intertwining lines of an instrumental trio sonata. The basic structure of these arias is the da capo, A-B-A. However, Bach was far too clever to continuously use this simple structure within the 10 arias, and within the 10 arias I have been working on, he deviates far more often than not. The modified da capo, then, can be considered more of the norm for today. The arias have been selected from cantatas of various lengths with movements made up of instrumental sinfonias, choruses, recitatives, arias, and chorales. The texts come from the Bible or from chorale tunes, or they were written for this purpose by German poets. Or the sources are unknown or anonymous. Although we will perform arias taken out of their context, we will need to consider the overall message of the cantata and how the aria fits into the progression of topics. Just one second. Okay, it's in my notes, I have to follow the rules. The aria we just performed was the first movement from the wedding cantata. I felt the beginning with a piece about springtime nature and love awakening was a fitting introduction to our discussion of Bach's interpretations of texts on various topics. In some ways, this particular aria differs from the others you will hear today. It is the only one from a secular cantata and would have been performed at weddings rather than in church services. The entire cantata is sung by a solo soprano, while most of the other cantatas for today are for mixed vocal ensembles. Finally, this aria is the only one today to be accompanied by a string ensemble rather than basso continuo alone. You heard two distinct sections, the first of them returning to create an AVA design. The first section, Adagio, sets the first two lines of text, which speak of darkness moving to light and the elements of winter receding to give way to springtime. The second section, marked Andante, is slightly faster and depicts symbolically the coming of spring. The two violins and viola create a background of rising arpeggios with ever-growing harmonic coloring. The line, Frost and Wind Go to Rest, is repeatedly set with slow descending line. The oboe obbligato, like the soprano, is extremely fluid and covers a wide range for the instrument. Depicting the mysterious emergence of springtime, the oboe and the soprano intertwine contrapuntally over a slow moving bass line and the wash of sound created by the strings. The second section twice moves from minor key to major, depicting in a different way the change from winter to spring. Its beginning is marked by a reduction to soprano and continuo, and then the texture grows as the text is repeated with the full ensemble. With the line, for she comes bearing flowers, the word bearing is set with long sequential melismas. The exchange between soprano and oboe during these melismas suggests a swinging of a basket of flowers back and forth. This bright setting of the second stanza closes in the dominant key of D major. A da capo sign at this point directs the ensemble to return to the beginning and restate the entire adagio portion. Among the arias to be heard today, the da capos will be abbreviated or truncated. This aria takes us through the entire adagio a second time, although it is so beautiful, a second hearing is welcome. So now we go on to two arias with very dark tone and lamenting texts. The first is from cantata number 21, one of the earlier cantatas from Bach's time in Weimar. It was performed three times during his career. This cantata overall is longer than the others and divides into two parts. The text throughout the first part is very sorrowful, lamenting the affliction in my heart. In the second part of the cantata, the narrator moves toward relief of this suffering through faith and trusting God. The aria at hand is squarely in the middle of the misery of the first part. As a personal expression of anguish, the aria is in a single affect with no relief or contrast. The first two lines of text consist of a list of items like sigh, grief, and tears. Bach's setting of these words divides the soprano's line into short fragments as if the singer is sobbing. The oboe fills in the silences and often imitates the soprano as though the oboe is representing the grief the narrator is outwardly describing. The aria is prevailingly in minor mode and is loaded with expressive dissonances, such as sighing appoggiaturas. An emotional high point is toward the end with a pause on the word for pain, Schmerz. The soprano leaps a wrenching minor seventh into this high note, which has a dissonant chord supporting it, and slowly falls from this peak with a descent to the soprano's final cadence, perhaps an expression of resignation. So before we play the piece, since we have a lot of them to get through, I'd like to ask if we could hold the applause until halfway through and then